Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi, and thanks for listening to the podcast. My name's April, but you might know me as the Podzilla. I've decided that I really want to share some things that I know because I know now that I didn't always know what I know, but now I do. So every week, I'll be sharing bite-sized real talks with advice that you didn't even know you needed. If you already follow me online, then you know that I love talking about why everybody is a good body, but there's lots of things that I didn't know about body positivity and activism that I'd love to share with you. As well as sharing my advice as a fat person so that you, like me, can become more inclusive and happy with your own body. I'm here to learn, teach, and grow. So if you are too, subscribe to hear from me whenever a new episode drops. Welcome back to episode 2 of season 2 of the podcast. Today's episode features a guest, Hannah Divany. You would be forgiven for thinking Hannah's last name is pronounced Divany because she is simply divine. Not only is Hannah a writer and disability advocate, but she's also a global campaigner for a disabled Disney princess and a nominee for 2022 Young Australian of the Year. At 22 years of age, Hannah has already become the editor-in-chief of Missing Perspectives, an online publication that shares the views and stories of marginalised people, and the founder of Crazy Cozy Climb, which you'll hear a little bit more about during the episode. Join me for a super special chat with Hannah, who is one of the most amazing people I've connected with online. I can't wait for you to hear everything she has to say. Thank you so much, Hannah Divany, for being here. I am so excited to have you as my first season 2 guest.
Thank you so much for having me. I can't believe we finally made this work. I feel like for anyone listening, April and I have a lot of conversations in DMs, so it's so nice to be able to actually record this and have a proper conversation that you guys get to hear too.
Yes, and to be able to see each other, because obviously all of our conversations are messages. So yeah, we don't do a lot of face to face, so to speak, face to screen. Well, again, thank you so much. I am super pleased to have you on the podcast. And the reason that I wanted you to come on and talk about you and how amazing you are is because I am just in awe of all of the things that you've achieved and the fact that this is just the beginning. To me, I just think this is the start of your star being on the rise. You have already done so much and there is so much yet to come. You're a writer, you're a disability advocate, you're the editor-in-chief at Missing Perspectives. You've been featured by Hello Sunshine, which of course we know is a Reese Witherspoon initiative. So that's pretty amazing. And you've been nominated for next year's Young Australian of the Year. Is there anything I've missed? Oh, just a worldwide campaign for Disney to bring us a disabled princess. No big deal. Just a couple of little achievements.
Just a tiny one there.
Amazing. So did I miss anything major, or do you think that covers the main
things? I think that covers everything that I can talk about for now.
There's more stuff coming. The NDAs be flying, girl.
Yeah, something like that. Something like that.
I love it. Amazing. So, Hannah, I would love to hear, first of all, the reason that I know who you are is because of your call to Disney to include a princess with disabilities in their mm-hmm. princess series. Obviously, we know diversity is a major reason that a lot of us end up connecting online, because we see people that we go, wow, that person's so interesting. They're talking about such a topic that I don't know enough about. And so when you actually put out your call to them through change.org, like what started that? What was the key to unlocking that moment of going, I'm going to ask them for this and I'm not going to stop asking until they do it?
Well, actually, the quest to kind of ask them the question began in 2015. I went and saw the Pixar film Inside Out with my family. And I remember sitting there thinking, wow, they've done a really great job of giving mental health, which is probably not what people think of when they think of kid-friendly topics, typically. They've done a really good job of making it accessible and nuanced so that kids can understand it, but so that it has still plenty of layers for adults to enjoy, which is what I find the best animation does, is it has plenty of layers for all the adults and parents watching. And basically after that, I wrote them an open letter that got published online by Mamma Mia, and from there I got a job working for Mamma Mia, but that's another story, we can get to that later. But in terms of this particular round of, I guess, conversation with change.org, that started because I was noticing that over the course of the pandemic and a bunch of other kind of social movements that coincided with that, there was a lot of really powerful discussion being had about systemic inequalities and discrimination and all of that kind of stuff. And there was a lot of talk at the time about Sia's new film, Music, and the potential. And for those of you who can't see, April is currently shaking her head,
making the frustrated face and just wondering
in
why.
In despair.
Why?
Yes.
Why? Yes, yes, yes.
So basically people were starting to have that conversation because obviously her portrayal of autism is quite harmful. And then that was leading to a broader conversation about representation on screen and kind of the effect of what they call cripping up, which is basically where an able-bodied actor or actress takes on a disabled role and then gets something like an Oscar for their trouble. Mm-hmm. And basically I saw that window and was like, right, I have this window, I'm gonna dive through it and
yes.
see what happens
straight
on the
through.
Other side.
Yeah.
And so we launched the petition on December 3rd, 2020, which is not coincidentally the International Day of People with Disabilities. It was a very strategic choice
yeah,
on our part because we
absolutely.
Figured disabled issues get the megaphone on days like that and they don't necessarily get that space on an average day.
Which is something that we need to change, obviously.
Yes.
And that's part of the work that you do is obviously wanting to make it a mainstream issue so that we can start to see that equality and see that undoing and that breaking down of those systemic inequalities that you mentioned before. I just think it's amazing. And you've had so much great traction. You've had so many people support the petition. And I am so proud of how you've continued to build on that. It's really special.
You.
And you're very young. And
yeah,
I feel
I'm
like
only 22.
Only 20. Just like Taylor Swift, she's feeling 22. And who, of course, Taylor Swift is a very apt mention, as you are a Swiftie
yes.
mega fan.
As am I.
Like I am a huge fan of Taylor Swift, especially in the last probably 3 to 5 years. But I just think you have achieved so much. So on that, I think we know that you worked with Mamma Mia, you've written for them, you've started the petition, and now Missing Perspectives. Can we talk a little bit about Missing Perspectives?
We certainly can. So Missing Perspectives is, I guess, in the scheme of things, still a pretty brand new baby. We only launched in June of this year. We were founded by a friend of mine, Phoebe Saintelin, who was basically doing some work and came across this report by the Gates Foundation that showed that women were feeling extremely underrepresented in like news, media, policy, decision-making, all of that stuff. And so she decided to do something about it. Originally, I was only supposed to be contacted as a writer because her mum had actually taught me in primary school and kept tabs on me kind of
throughout. Because teachers are amazing and we love
throughout
teachers.
The years, and teachers are amazing and they need more money and support. For anyone listening who has the power to pay teachers more, please.
That is a very not subtle hint for you to support teachers better, whoever's listening. Yep.
Yeah. And then we got talking because she was like, I don't have any editorial experience. I don't know what I'm doing. And I was like, well, I kind of have a little bit. Like, I've sort of absorbed different stuff from either reading lots of different publications or working there or having kind of a decent freelancing career and seeing how different people do things and sort of cherry picking things I like about what they do and making sure to steer away from things that I don't like necessarily that they do. And yeah, we've sort of built it from the ground up. And you mentioned before the Reese Witherspoon Hello Sunshine collaboration, which is amazing.
Yes. Well deserved. That happened
last week. So we've definitely had some growth, I think, in terms of our visibility. But yeah, we have writers from over 40 countries and an audience in 100.
Amazing. And look, you know, that to me, I think the missing perspectives that will now be able to be covered in those places. And the ways that
I hope so.
Yeah. And sharing your perspectives and the perspectives of the people that you platform through the publication. I just think that's wonderful. So nominated for Young Australian of the Year. How much of a surprise was that?
You could have knocked me over. I mean, to be fair, I have no balance. So knocking me over is not that difficult. Yeah, and it's all right. You can laugh at that because it's true.
Stop myself. That was, oh my, you have the most impeccable sense of timing. Like, you really are one of the funniest people I know. Oh my goodness.
But in terms of like expecting that was not something that I thought would happen. It was said in jest to me. Well, I thought it was in jest, but it turns out they were deadly serious. At the end of this event that I do called the Crazy Cozy Climb, which I co-founded, which basically sees people with cerebral palsy and their families climb Mount Kosciuszko, which for anyone who doesn't know is Australia's highest point, and as a result of that, officially one of the 7 summits of the world, which is definitely not something I think most people would imagine within the scope of a disabled person's capabilities. So that's kind of the whole point. But basically, we just wrapped that in February earlier this year. We do it in February every year. And I had given this speech and a bunch of people were coming up to me congratulating me on the speech and saying how good they thought it was and how much they'd love the event. And one of our kind of key sponsors, who is a very well-connected individual, came up to me and said, I think that's Young Australian of the Year material right there. And I just laughed him off because what else are you supposed to do when someone says that to you?
Yeah,
you
just sort of go,
yeah. But it's also that imposter syndrome pesky thing. You're like, yeah, that's not for me, that space. Yeah. And then it was one of those things where I had kind of assumed that it was a comment that was well-intentioned, but that like no action would come from it. Just one of those things that people say in the moment that they definitely mean, but just life gets in the way, all that kind of stuff.
But there was not a lot of action behind those words. You just didn't think that was something that was going to happen.
Just because I had no idea what the process looked like. I don't I didn't know anything about it. And then a couple of weeks later, I got a call that was like, no, I was serious about nominating you. How do we go about doing this? Let's do it. So we did. And we're kind of obviously still waiting to see what happens. I think state finalists for each award get announced at like the end of this month or early November. So we'll see if I made it that far. But yeah, it just blows me away because I definitely wasn't expecting that sort of thing. And then the other thing is that I was initially really hesitant to take it because I was like, I'm not really in it for like personal glory or gratification or any of that sort of stuff. So like, I don't know that I really want all that attention. Like, that's not really me. Like, I very much, I'm a private person. And then I think watching obviously what Grace Tame has done with her Australian of the Year portfolio this year and trying and like looking at the ways in which she has made the conversation not about her but at the broader issue at hand, yeah. When I kind of sat there and thought this could be a really powerful moment for disability issues, yeah. For disability representation, like,
yeah.
I would end up just being the messenger, it doesn't have to be about me, then I was like, okay, we can give this a go.
I'm so happy that you did. And I completely agree. Look, I personally quite like attention. So I would be fine with being offered an award of any sort. But I appreciate, I think that's such an indication of who you are, who you come across to be to me, is someone who's really doing this because you genuinely want to change the world. Not because you like a pat on the back. It's not because you want to, you know, everyone to talk about how great you are, even though you are great.
Thank you.
But this for you is a cause that you want to champion. You don't necessarily, yeah. Want to be the face of it. You just simply want to uplift other people and you want to get these messages out where they can be heard by people who can actually make the change and therefore be someone who makes, yeah. The change yourself.
And I think I was explaining this to someone the other day. I said everything that I do is in service of the idea that I want it to be better for whoever comes after me. Because
you're just amazing. I just adore you.
Grew up not having really any sort of role models or even an idea of like what disabled adulthood could look like.
Yeah.
Like literally I was just like, I have no idea what the future could look like. And it was quite a blank page, not in necessarily that like it's filled with possibilities, but in the like literal fact of like, I don't know what goes here because I've never seen it before. And I know that I don't want to be a Paralympian for reasons that, like, I guess there's nothing specific that means that I don't want to be a Paralympian. I just always chafed against the idea that that was the only path of success for me because, yeah. I grew up the oldest of three girls, so I have two younger sisters who are both obviously able-bodied and fiercely sporty and very physically active, which is a whole nother thing to grow up with. But basically I would look at them and be like, well, hold on, you're not assuming that they want to be Olympians, you're not asking them what their Olympic sport is going to be, because number one, you understand that only the elite of the elite get to the Olympics, and number two, you understand that not everybody wants to get there. So why should I? And also, what happens if I don't? Like, I think it was during that SBS special, What Does Australia Really Think About Disability, that Kurt Fernley was talking about the gap between the respect that he gets as a Paralympian versus the gap that other people with disabilities, like the same respect that they get.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which brings us to all sorts of narratives about like the whole overcoming your disability idea, which is just toxic and really painful, because I guess it's like saying I'm going to overcome my eye color. Like, I can't, I can't change it.
Part of who you are. And it, and
so it's, So everything that I achieve is always going to be with my disability firmly in hand, I think. As much as I didn't want it to be when I was a kid, I hated being disabled. Which means essentially that I hated myself. And like the level of, I guess, damage that can be baked into you when you don't get the right representation, or when the only representation that you see ends up being harmful, is really dangerous. And that's the reason why I guess the Disney campaign is so important to me, because I'm like, well, if we can start at that age, and if we can start making it normal from there, then hopefully kids don't have to grow up feeling that way. And on the flip side, it makes able-bodied kids who are watching, it means that they're already starting on the path to being allies, because it's not scary.
It's become a conversation, you know, like I suppose where we feel more comfortable because we've been so privileged to be given all of this free education in a lot of cases from people like yourself, Carly Finlay, Kurt Fernley, Dylan Alcott, people who are public speakers who talk about disability and how it, you know, is affected their, how it has affected their lives, but also how we as allies who are not part of the disability community can really help, aside from the obvious moments of being able to say, hey, being ableist is not cool, which, you know, is the bare minimum. But, you know, I think that that privilege that we've had to learn from all of you allows people like me, you know, I have a child, to have conversations that I feel comfortable talking about. Okay, yes, you know, there's a person in a wheelchair. Oh yeah, some people use wheelchairs and some people don't. That's, I mean, I don't kind of dig too deep into it. It's just about saying, yeah, some people have wheelchairs. It doesn't, we don't need to make a big deal out of it for that person. That person doesn't need us to, you know, have a whole story around what they're doing just to understand, yep, some people do and some people don't. We had a great chat yesterday about the noise that the traffic lights make, like the beeping when you go to cross. And my child said, oh, why is it making a noise? What's that noise? And I said, oh, it's for the light. You know how when we see the green man, we know we're allowed to cross. Well, if we couldn't see that, we would still have to know when to cross. He goes, yeah, well, some people don't have any eyes. I said, well, that's right. And he said, yeah. And then we kept walking. It really didn't have to be a big deal.
You're raising a good ally there.
I'm doing my best, 100%.
You really are. No.
So.
And that's one of the things that I always try and tell people, because, like, I have always, since I was a kid, attracted the stares of other kids. And my mom has always taught me that it's really important for me to engage them as much as I can. Now, that works sometimes, but sometimes parents are really embarrassed, or they go, oh, no, we don't have to talk about that, or, like, they reprimand their kid for staring at me or for coming over or that kind of stuff. And I'm like, I would just prefer that you come and ask me the question. Like, yes, I know that it's emotional labor on me and you don't want to bother me, but really, if I can just make it that little bit easier or that little bit less strange, so that the next time it happens, maybe your son or daughter reacts differently, I think that's good.
Yeah, and I appreciate kind of that acknowledgement of you saying, I know it's emotional labor, because there are going to be people who are not open to that, and that is so okay, that choice. Just the same way if someone came up and said to me, well, like, why are you fat, or why is your hair green? Because they're the most common question I get when I talk to some child I've never met before is, why is your hair green? And I just say, why not? Because, like, what's the answer?
Yeah.
Really, in the simplest terms, why not? And I think it's it's that your willingness is something that I really admire about you. But I think we also, if you were to say, I don't want to have this conversation today, I'm exhausted, because that is the reality, that sometimes you're just like, I feel like I've said this 400 times and it's only Wednesday.
Yeah.
That you are allowed to say that too. And I think people need to really try hard to gauge when it's the right moment to say, maybe you should ask Hannah why she's in a wheelchair. Because then you'd say, well, yeah, this is why. Or you would just say, I use it to get around. And hopefully they could realize that that's the end of the conversation. Goodbye. Thank you.
Generally with kids, I always try and have that openness, because I'm like, well, they don't know.
Yeah.
They don't know that I've been asked that question 400 times, or they don't know that I got really sad because it frustrated me that I couldn't get out of bed by myself this morning or whatever it was. So with them, yeah, I always try and be open. Sometimes you get adults who are a little bit more invasive necessarily. And that's a bit like, guys, please don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just let me do my thing.
Yeah. Like anyone else.
It doesn't even necessarily come out in the form of a question. Like, it'll be like, this used to happen quite regularly when I was traveling to and from uni, because I still technically am at uni for a couple more weeks, and then I finished my degree, but I've done 2 years of it online and 2 years traveling back and forth to Wollongong, which means taking the train and the bus, so dealing with public transport, you're obviously dealing with a huge cross-section of the population. Yeah. And they would ask me where I'd come from or what I was doing, and I would say, oh, I've just come back from uni, or I'm just going to uni. And for a split second, you'd be able to see their brain have to completely sort of recalibrate their idea of me.
Yeah, because that wasn't the answer that they were expecting, because they already made up a story about you in their head.
Yeah, or some people will automatically assume, like, oh, you've come from TAFE, right? And I'm like, no. I'm doing a double degree at uni.
Like, and look, yeah, that's, I mean, I went to TAFE and loved it, but there was no reason for anyone to make that assumption. There's no reason. Yeah. It's all biases, whether they're subconscious or, you know, unconscious. You know, they are biases, and they're things that you compete against every day because people are telling themselves stories about strangers.
Yeah. And I guess, like, there's other biases there to unpack, which would obviously be that TAFE is still seen somewhat as a, like, lesser form of education, when in reality it's not. We all need people with those skills to help us get through our lives. And I think one thing I hope the pandemic teaches people is maybe not to take people for granted so much.
Yeah, the value of frontline workers and people who do jobs that have not always been considered to have the same prestige as something like a lawyer or a doctor, although we know doctors haven't been treated all that well. You know, I totally agree. I do think that there is probably a bias around what education has value and prestige. And I think that's another thing. And that's where, you know, in the past I've talked about intersectionality, and that's one of those things where we think, people who learn in an educational institution that's not necessarily surrounded by accolades don't learn things that are not as important as other people.
They just learn differently.
Yeah, and in a different environment.
And potentially, some might say, in a more open environment, because typically our institutions are surrounded by people who generally look the same.
Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, we've seen recently in the news conversations around certain educational institutions and the types of people who leave those institutions to go on to not necessarily be the people that we want in our lives. So, yeah, I think that we really, I think we both know what we're talking about. But I I do think that we need to make space in our own minds for the possibility that nobody is what you're expecting them to be, because the only experience that you might have of someone is that first impression. And so you need to allow that person to make their impression before you decide who they are and what they're about.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Amazing. So, Hannah, you're also someone who works quite closely with the CPA, and yep. Cerebral Palsy Alliance are an organisation whom I hold in high esteem, not only for the work that they do, but because I have a couple of friends who also benefit from the work that they do. Mm-hmm. And yeah, is there anything, you know, in terms of the work that you've done with them, is there anything that you've seen as you've done that's really like warmed your heart? Have you seen any moments in your work with CPA that you go, oh my God, this is why I do what I do?
Yeah, so I was really lucky to get to hold a Instagram Q&A for them on World CPA Day, which was the 6th of October. And that was basically just answering people's questions about CPE and just like busting common myths and all that kind of stuff. But I got some lovely DMs that were sort of along the lines of, we're really glad that our son or daughter with CPE or friend or whatever has someone like you to look up to. We are really happy that like our able-bodied kids will get to see what you do. And just, I'm also really fortunate that Cerebral Palsy Alliance has given me a monthly column, in which I get to essentially be the adult that I never got to see for yes. other kids That's, coming yeah. through, which is, like I said, exactly the reason why I do everything that I do. So yeah. getting the opportunity to really exist in those spaces and to hear from the people who know what my life looks like, that they appreciate what I'm doing. That's kind of the greatest form of compliment that I could ever get, really.
Really wonderful. And I think you spoke before about feeling like adulthood was a bit of a blank page for you. And so mm-hmm. now you get to fill in that page with a little bit of your experience, something for them to go,
yeah.
when I turn the page, there's something to know where I can, you know, what I can do and where I could land as far as chasing dreams and believing that you can do whatever it is that you want to do. And in your case, what you want to do yeah. is make the world a better place.
Yeah. And I definitely think like we need disabled representation in every arena. So we need disabled lawyers, we need disabled teachers, we need disabled doctors, we need disabled people who work at the supermarket. We need representation in every arena and at every level, so that when disabled kids are kind of coming through, they can choose whatever they want. Yeah. Like I'm lucky and particularly fortunate that like my skill is in writing, which means that I get to put my words out to a big audience, and then I'm sort of developing something of a public profile. But I also want to make sure that like the kids coming up and kind of other disabled people who are really unsure about what the future might hold know that they don't necessarily have to step into having a public profile or being a public advocate in order for them to be successful either, because I think public advocacy is a choice and it's not something that we expect of everybody. Sometimes it's just enough that you advocate for yourself and you get through the day and you do what you have to do. And to be honest, there was a time where I definitely thought that being a public advocate was not for me, because I was struggling so much to keep my own head above water that I was like, God, I can't worry about it about anyone else. It's just like all I can think about is getting through each day. And then sort of as I got older, I realized that the literal privilege of like having a voice, and by this I mean the physical act of being able to speak and articulate myself and be understood, is a privilege. Because for anyone who doesn't know, cerebral palsy basically exists on a spectrum where at one end you have people who are only affected on one side, so they might walk a little bit lopsided, they might have a claw hand, they might get fatigue, all that kind of stuff. And then right at the other end, you have people who essentially all they can do for themselves independently is breathe and swallow.
Mm-hmm.
I am very fortunate to sit in the middle of the spectrum, but that wasn't necessarily going to be the case. In fact, when I was born, the doctors told my parents, worst case scenario, that I would never walk, talk, or feed myself. So the fact that I do have a voice and that I can be understood is definitely not something I take for granted, because it quite honestly wasn't supposed to happen. So now I feel that, well, if I've been lucky enough to, for whatever reason, have that not be the case, then I've got a responsibility to use it.
You know, I think I'm one of those people, and you know, this might sound a little bit woo-woo, but I'm okay with that, that I honestly believe that there is a reason for that. We, you know, as the people who follow you and listen to what you have to say, we are the lucky ones who get to hear your thoughts and have you articulate this message that you have for us so beautifully and in a way that is so easy for us to go, oh, yeah, okay, that makes so much sense, Hannah. Thank you. Because I really do think that you are a very special individual. And I think your choice to be a public advocate, when you're quite right, it would be perfectly reasonable for you to simply say, I choose me. I choose to take care of myself. I choose to use the voice that I have simply to speak for myself so that I'm able to be treated the way that I want to be treated. Your choice to do more is something that's really powerful and something that shouldn't be understated, because it's not easy. And we both know that it can be hard to spend a lot of time creating content and sharing what can be trauma to help people understand what it is to live your life, to be in your shoes. I really think that that's something that I can't understate how grateful I am that I connected with you.
Aww. Well, that makes two of us. I am extremely grateful that I connected with you, because I think the work that you do in making people feel more comfortable in their own skin and more comfortable with their bodies, and even like not necessarily having your body be a topic of conversation, is really important. That I've certainly taken a lot out of it, because I have struggled a lot with body image and like my relationship to my body, especially in the context of like what it's supposed to look like or what it's supposed to do, or the ways that I operate differently to all the girls in the magazines or on the billboards or those sorts of things.
I want you to be one of those girls, Hannah. That's what I want to see. I think I said this about the campaign that I did with Curvy Swim, Beach Please. It wasn't just about the idea of people who have fat bodies being comfortable. It's about everybody. And I think me being the first fat bikini model on a billboard in Australia is just one thing that we need to do, and one thing that mainstream media needs to show us. It's not just about that. We've got to keep working to diversify, genuinely diversify media and the images of bodies and people who we see and who are championed. And I think that, I see that in your future. I do.
I hope you're right there. I hope it gets to that stage, because I would love to see it. And I think as well, and Carly Finlay does a great job of talking about this. There's a lot of room in mainstream media where disfigurement or other forms of disability that affect how you look are used as symbols of evil or villainy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like if we look at, say, this new James Bond film is going to be the biggest film that everyone's talking about. If you look at the history of Bond villains, most of them have some deformity in inverted commas or facial difference or something along those lines that is meant to be used as a symbol to the audience that like they are the bad guy.
Yeah. Or like, you know, the six-fingered man in Princess Bride, or Anne Hathaway's digitally altered hands in The Witches. It's not even subtle.
No, it's literally not subtle.
Between that and I think, you know, the other signaling around, you know, whether it's queer villains and things like that, like we have so far to go in terms of how we show our audiences, especially children, who the bad guy is. But I think we're further. The fact that the witches came out and there was such a huge outcry and support for the message that this was a far cry from what was the right choice from that studio. Yeah. I think that's marvelous, because 20 years ago, nobody would have said anything. People would have spoken about it in their own, you know, in their own lives and circles, but a public message condemning that to the point where Anne Hathaway had to be like, holy shit, I've made a terrible mistake. You know, I think that's so powerful. But again, the bare minimum, because it should never have happened. Somebody in that room should have been able to go, I don't think we should give her these, you know, these differences, these physical differences, to signal that she's the ultimate evil. But the fact that there wasn't that person in the room is where you come in, because you are making a place for people to have powerful voices, both online and as part of the media more broadly, and for those opportunities to be in the room to happen.
Yeah, because I think, and I sort of gave a similar quote, I guess, in an interview that I did recently with Pop Sugar, not to name drop, but that was pretty cool, where basically I said something along the lines of, like, the people who are in power now have seen no reason to change things, because it suits them. So, like, if we want things to change, the people at the top and the people who have the power to make the decisions have to change too, because clearly, like, they're not the ones we want making decisions about those kind of things, because they haven't seen the gaps where we see them.
Yeah, 100%. And I think the reason for change has to be you wanting it, and it must come from a want to just have a better world, because you can't simply say, well, if it doesn't affect me, then I don't need to work for it. That's what allyship is, choosing to work for a cause that doesn't actually affect you. That's what allyship needs to be about, making yourself uncomfortable, whether that be, you know, opportunities being given to people who haven't had those chances. And yeah, that maybe means that you don't get as many opportunities. Not everything is finite. Some things are. And I think the ability to choose a better world and a better experience for young people over yourself, that's allyship in part.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there will be some people who react to that kind of sentiment and go, oh, but this better world is so much more politically correct. This better world is gone too far. This better world is like, why couldn't we just leave it where no one had a problem? Like, why is everyone so sensitive all of a sudden? And it's like, well, actually, they've been sensitive the whole time. They just now have the means to express it in a place where you are more likely to hear that they're sensitive.
Yeah. Are we sensitive, or are you insensitive? That's the real question.
Yes. Yeah. And like, I definitely think one thing that anyone who creates content online knows, people aren't always going to agree with you. You're going to get people in your DMs who hate what you're doing, who are very much against it, who think that you're being too much or that you're asking too much. And I always try and take that as a twisted sort of compliment, because I'm like, well, this means my work has actually moved beyond the echo chamber of people who would tell me I was doing a good job regardless of what I was doing.
It's so true.
Like, it's obviously so true. My family is not going to like pander to me, but there's a level of like, they're always going to support what I do.
Yeah.
So if I'm getting feedback from strangers that they don't like it, that means it's moved to strangers, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's that they're being exposed to the message. And, you know, if we hope that a fraction of those strangers, instead of hearing it and disagreeing with it, hear it and they sit with it and they get uncomfortable with themselves without having to come into your DM, then that is a positive change. Hannah, I want to thank you so much again for coming on the podcast. It's been my absolute pleasure to talk with you. And I just want to know, is there anything that you would like to share with the people who are hopefully listening to this episode?
Well, first of all, I think if you're listening to the podcast, you're a pretty awesome human, because that shows that you care and that you want to learn. And hopefully I've taught you something, and hopefully there's like more places for me to teach you things, like come say hi on social media, support my projects, check out Missing Perspectives, sign the Disney petition, keep your eyes out for some more cool stuff coming soon.
Because that's just what you do. You keep doing more cool things. I am going to put the links to all of the important places, like Hannah's Instagram and to the Missing Perspectives website and the petition, in the show notes. You can also come and follow me on Instagram, where you will always find me sharing things from Hannah. So no worries. You will definitely find us. Once again, Hannah Diviney, thank you so much for being my first Series 2 guest on the podcast. Thanks again for listening to this episode of the podcast, part of the Acast Creator Network. If you enjoyed it, then don't forget to rate, like, subscribe, follow, whatever it is that you need to do so that you don't miss an episode. And if you know someone that might like it, don't forget to share it with them. You can also come and chat to me about anything from this episode on Instagram or Facebook. You'll find me at The Bodzilla. This podcast is about me, but it's also about you. So if you have questions, need advice, or want to hear my thoughts on something, head to thebodzilla.com and let me know. I'll leave the links where you can find them.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.